Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Big 12 media days are underway right now. You know what that means. Oklahoma State head coach Mike Gundy has already taken the stage. Now, in terms of Mike Gundy getting up there and doing what he does, he talked about a number of things, important things. He talked about the mood around the program coming off a 7-6 season. The Cowboys had had 10 wins in each of their previous three seasons, four of their last five. So, you know, he was not thrilled about last season. He knows 7-6 is not good enough. He knows he's got to get back to work. And this is a man who's not afraid to work.
We all kind of sit around after March Madness and wait for college football in the state of Oklahoma. So we're not far away. Our staff has been tremendous with the addition of a few new coaches. I'm excited about what they've brought to the table, the cohesiveness and chemistry we have with them, and our recruiting office and the hard work they've put in over the last 3 or 4 months. And I'm more excited and looking forward to a season than I ever have been before in a long, long time.
All right, so you might wonder once again why I would start the program by talking about him, by talking about that conference, by talking about that program. It's a given, right? What he means to the sport, what he means to college football, what he means to this country. And he did talk about the improvements and changes on that staff. He talked about how he expects the defense to be improved this year in the second year under D coordinator Jim Knowles. He talked about the focus on playing more disciplined football. He talked about the quarterback situation, the ensuing battle between Spencer Sanders and Drew Brown, and the fact that nobody has won that battle yet, and that there's a chance that he may actually play both. You know, never mind that whole thing about if you have two quarterbacks, you really don't have one. I don't buy that. He talked about it. Most importantly, though, he talked about the mullet, the Kentucky waterfall, the Tennessee top hat, the soccer rocker, mullet watch 2019 was in full effect yesterday. Because you know that really is the biggest story. Not just for Mike Gundy in media days, but for all of college football during media days season. Is the mullet still there, or did he take it down in the offseason? And the great news is, the mullet lives. The mullet does not just live, it thrives. There has never been more business in that front or a bigger party in the back. I'm telling you, it's breathtaking. And if I'm being honest, it looks more powerful and more majestic than ever before. If you think that hockey hair looks great on the sideline, blowing in that Stillwater breeze, you have not seen the Missouri Compromise unfurled against a pinstripe suit. Man, that is class and power personified.
If you
were not near a TV with CBS Sports Network right now, you better get there. I don't care what you're doing. I don't care if you're at work. If you are, get to the break room or a conference room or to the bathroom. Fire up your phone. Do it right now. If you're driving, get off the road. Find somebody with a television because you need to be watching CBS Sports Network right this second. Because Mike Gundy is now about to speak about the mullet.
Coach, I apologize for asking this, but how much longer will you have the mullet?
I thought about actually getting a haircut yesterday, but it was Sunday and they were closed, so I decided to go ahead and wing it. I don't know anymore. It's hard for me at times to decide what I'm going to do the next day until I get into the season, so just kind of hang out and go with it, you know. As long as it makes me look a little younger, if somebody said it makes you look old, I'll probably cut it.
First off, allow me to answer that question with a question. The hell is your problem? That question, how much longer will you have the mullet? That implies that there is a lifespan to the mullet. It insinuates that there will be a time when he doesn't have the Camaro cut. And that, brah, is not an insinuation you should be making. Because that's just not a world that I want to be living in. And don't think for a second. Brah, for a second, Don't ever suggest that there's going to be a day where that beaver paddle does not cover the back of his neck. Damn, America. Do you have any idea how close we came to a complete and total catastrophe? Can you imagine if that barbershop had been open on Sunday and he had actually taken that thing down? The thought of him without a neck warmer makes me want to puke. Thanks, Avi. And if somebody ever tells you that that perfect look makes him look old, they're a liar and a fool and a felon and a liar. Not only does that mullet make him look young, it makes him look awesome and smart. Mike Gundy is somebody who's given us so much. He's given everybody so much. There's that legendary rant that had so much in it. Some real gems that are constantly forgotten, like this.
So get your facts straight.
And of course, the single word masterpiece.
Garbage.
And the godfather of all drops from this.
Facts.
There's his rant about Twitter last year that had him leaning up against the podium with one elbow dropping sounds.
Criticism where? From where?
Outside noise.
From where?
Twitter, radio.
Yeah. Oh, I give a rat's ass about Twitter. It's a platform for people that are sitting home trolling an unemployment check, sitting in front of a keyboard.
Coach Tyler had a really big game. First
I'm not disregarding what you're saying. Trust me, I get it at my own house. But, I mean, I just kind of felt like that social media and Twitter is what's destroying this country anyway. So that's how I feel about it, from politics to sports to whatever. It gives people a platform to and then other people are, like, needling it, and they're sitting at home, and they're late on a payment. So, anyway, that's how I feel.
But I'm going to say, as great as all those press conference moments were, nothing has been a greater gift to this world than Mike Gundy's hair. I'm not one for making predictions, but hear this and hear it now. Hear it now, understand it later. Mike Gundy will get Oklahoma State back to where they belong. The offensive line will be opening up holes. The defense will be getting after the quarterback. And as long as he has that Canadian passport rocking, there will be business up front and partying in the backfield. Long live the mullet. Now, you know I'm on record as saying something sucks is not a take. But if you've got a problem with Mike Gundy's mullet, you suck. Long live the mullet. Shortstop Francisco Lindor is my guest. Francisco, great to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. How you doing?
Good, man, good. Good to talk to you. So you're coming off a win over Detroit, which gives you a couple of straight wins after dropping a pair to Minnesota coming out of the All-Star break. How good did it feel to start the series against Detroit with that win?
Felt really good. At the end of the day, we try to win every single day. We couldn't get those first two wins against Minnesota the first 2 days after the All-Star break, but it seems like we're on the right track right now. We're enjoying the game.
You know, overall, it's a team that had a losing record at the end of May, but in June and July, you've completely turned this thing around. You've gone 24-11 since then. You're now tied for the wild card. What has been the biggest change for the Indians?
I think we started to believe on each other. Rely on each other, and play the game the right way. At the end of the day, it's a long season. It's an extremely long season, and there's still a lot of games left. And at the beginning, it seemed like all the new guys were still like in that mindset of, am I going to stay here? Do I belong here? But now they all truly believe that they belong here and they're going to stay here, and it's all about winning right now.
Prepare for summer road trips. Before you head out, visit O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simple preventative maintenance before you hit the road will ensure a safe journey during the summer months ahead. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Indian shortstop Francisco Lindor joining us. You know, every time I have your manager, Terry Francona, on the program, he talks about how much he loves you as a player. So what's Tito like as a manager, and what's he like to play for?
Tito has been amazing. He has been a blessing to my life and to all of our lives. Because he has allowed me to be Francisco Lindor since day one. That's why he said the first meeting I had with him, it was like, just be you, be Francisco Lindor, but show them you want to win. Show them you're here to help this team get better on the daily basis, and the guys will respect you. You will earn their respect, and no matter what you do, don't back down from anything. And that's exactly what I've been doing since day one, listening to Tito. And I thank him a lot because he let me be me.
Now, in addition to that, the one thing that he talks about all the time is your love of the game and how you can bring that to the park every single night. When did you first fall in love with baseball?
I was a young boy. My dad, he coached the game, and my brother and my cousin, they played the game. So I was always around the game. I was always in the backyard with a baseball glove and a bat. I'm playing around. I was probably like 4 or 5 years old. That's when I couldn't get away from the game, and that's all I've done since I was a little kid.
Francisco Lindor is my guest. You mentioned your father. So how much did you learn from your father about hitting and especially about being a switch hitter?
A lot, a lot. My swing, I owe it to him. Of course, I have made some adjustments as I continue along the way, but he was the one that taught me my swing and taught me how to use my hips, use my hands, pretty much everything I what I look like right now, it comes from my dad. And then along the way, I made some adjustments. You know, you continue to grow, you continue to learn from others, and you implement it into your game, and you continue to get better.
We're talking Indian shortstop Francisco Lindor. You know, on top of that, when you were 12, your father suggested that you go to Florida with him to play and to go to Monteverde Academy. So you were leaving home at a really young age, and you went to a school where you didn't know the language that well. Looking back, what was that time like?
It was a scary moment. It was scary knowing that I was going to a different country, not knowing the language, and not knowing who I was going to school with. You know, the first day of school is always a little nerve-wracking. Imagine not knowing the language and not knowing anybody. Maybe a little bit more scary, but at the end of the day, it was the best decision me and my family have made. And I have no regrets. I have no regrets. It was a young Francisco Lindor running around telling people, I don't know the language. Don't talk to me. I don't know.
Yeah, it's got to be a really challenging time. Yet here we are, and you're conducting this interview on a nationally syndicated program. I've always been amazed by athletes who can do that, and I really admire it. I really respect it. You know, you started this season with an injury, which meant that you missed the first few weeks of the regular season. Knowing how much the game means to you, knowing how much you love the game, how challenging a time was that?
Man, it was really challenging. Knowing that my team left, they broke camp, they went somewhere else to get the season going, and I wasn't there to be there with them. It is upsetting. It sucked. You know, you start learning to not take anything for granted, to understand that health is a blessing, and you got to do whatever it takes on a daily basis to stay healthy.
Now, Francisco, in terms of that, earlier this season, you and your teammates learned that Carlos Carrasco had been diagnosed with leukemia. What was your reaction when you heard that Cookie had been diagnosed with cancer? And then how have you gone about supporting him?
It was shocking. It was a shocking news, something you never expect from somebody that's so happy and looks so healthy and is performing at a very high level. He mentioned it. We all looked around like, oh my God, you know, this is real. This is real. This is something that you don't want no one to go through. And now you have a teammate going through it, and our problems that we have at the batter's box or on the mound or on the field are Disney problems. This is a real problem. You know, what he's going through is a real problem. It's something that you can lose your life, you know. Nobody's counting on it. Nobody, believe that's what's going to happen because Cookie's so strong and he compete on everything he does and he's going to be fine. But it makes you realize that life is precious and life is too short for us to be worrying about what's happening on the field.
Extremely well said, my man. Francisco Lindor joining us. I want to ask you about your Topps baseball cards in one moment, but I do want to ask you about the fact that you played in the All-Star game. It was your fourth time that you were named to the All-Star team, but you got to play in Cleveland in front of your own fans. When you were wearing a microphone during the All-Star game, you were giving out advice like where people should eat. You were talking about Cleveland as, quote, my city. What's it been like for you to play in Cleveland, and how do you like that town?
I love Cleveland. Cleveland's a great city. But better yet, they got great people here. They have people that are very genuine. They care about players. They care about the sports. And I loved it, playing in Cleveland during the All-Star game. It was truly special. The fans, they behaved. They did they did great how they always have. And the city, the MLB and the Cleveland Indians, they put up a great event. It turned out to be very nice everywhere you went, and it's my favorite All-Star game.
Francisco Lindor, my guest. Now, you are working with Topps Baseball Cards, and you've created your own set of players involving icons of the past, the present, and the future, guys like Derek Jeter, Mike Trout, Yadier Molina, Roberto Clemente, Jackie Robinson. What did it mean to be able to create your own set of cards and include all those players?
It's always fun whenever you can put your own roster in baseball cards. You know, you grow up and you try to collect some cards, or you see your friends collecting cards, and now you can put your favorite players and players that set the way for all of us. And it's fun. It's cool. You get to customize them however you want. You put a little touch of your own. And Topps did an amazing job of creating and making ideas come to reality.
It is cool. And if people listening or watching want to get the set, it is available on Topps.com. Really quickly, which cards are your favorite in that set?
The current rosters, because that's the ones I see now. Those are the ones I see now, The Javi, me, Trout, those are pretty cool. But also the old school time, the old timers, those are cards you don't get to see on a daily basis no more. You know, you don't see somebody come up to you and next to you there's a Ken Griffey or Roberto Clemente card next to you.
He is a four-time All-Star. He is a Gold Glove winner. He is a two-time Silver Slugger. Today, he appeared courtesy of Topps and the Topps X Lindor set. Francisco, so glad I could finally get you on the show. Great to talk to you. I really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I want to talk about the LA Dodgers. They're on the East Coast right now. So that means all of you who do not have the chance to see them every night are getting a good look at them. You're getting a good look at them, and they look good. In fact, this team is good. Really, really good. Not just talented, but tough as hell and patient. And they will beat you in so many different ways. Take Sunday night in Boston, for example. The final game of a rare trip to Fenway for the Dodgers. And they made it last. 12 innings, 5 hours, 40 minutes. And they came away with a 7-4 win. And the offense, no showed on Friday night. After that, they scored 18 runs on Saturday and Sunday. Sunday night was a clinic in Dodger baseball. Maybe you don't know about them, so let me explain the way they go about their business. They don't just mash. They make you work. Even when they're not scoring, they make you work. They drew 24 pitches in the 10th, 27 in the 11th, 36 pitches in the 12th. Boston went through 13 relievers on Saturday and on Sunday. The Dodgers grind pitching staffs and bullpens. They exhaust you mentally and physically. And they did it again on Sunday. Only this time, the Dodgers, who have walked off more than their share of games this year, won that game with a go-ahead RBI walk. And then they ate dinner at 1 o'clock in the morning. Then they took off for Philadelphia right before 3 a.m. So if there was ever a game where the Dodgers would not be the Dodgers, where they would not show up the way they have all year, it was going to be last night. Coming off nearly a six-hour game in Boston, they land in Philly around sunrise, and there's no way the Dodgers show up last night. And then they go hitless through their first three innings. They trail 1-0. But then they went to work in the fourth. RBI double, RBI infield single, RBI single, RBI bunt, RBI single, and then this.
As Peterson gets caught in a rundown, Segura throws home and he's safe. They execute the play to bring home Barnes. They're just toying with him now.
That's Austin Barnes stealing home. No, correction. That's catcher Austin Barnes stealing home. And that's the Dodgers fitting the Phillies for a clown suit. I mean, that's almost cruel and inhumane to just mock and toy with a team like that. If you did that in Little League, the parents of the Phillies players would be pissed and probably looking to fight somebody. Because that was not just a beating, that was an embarrassment. A catcher stealing home? A catcher stealing home. That's an all-timer. And an all-time bad look for a team that allowed it to happen. And it was just getting started. It got worse from there because here's Cody Bellinger in the top of the fifth.
And Bellinger hammers one deep to right field. Back to the wall is Harper. He looks up. It is gone. A home run. Cody Bellinger. His 32nd of the season.
Dodgers Radio Network on the call. That was Bellinger in the fifth. Here is Bellinger in the seventh.
Pitch to Bellinger. He swings and he hits a high fly ball right center field. This ball's gone! Bellinger with his second belly bomb of the night. And it is 8-1.
And that did give them an 8-1 lead. And it gave Bellinger the NL lead in, quote, belly bombs. And the ball was barely over the fence before Max Muncy came up after him.
Ramos ready to deal. Here comes the pitch. And Muncy hits one high and deep to right center. This ball back. This ball gone. Back-to-back home runs. Bellinger and Muncy. Mad Max, the road warrior, with another road home run. It's his
belly bombs. Mad Max. What a beatdown. And they weren't done yet. Five more in the eighth. Two more in the ninth. They kept piling it on until the madness finally stopped at 16-2. 16-2. I mean, they were doing it with bombs, belly bombs, Mad Max, infield hits, bunts, a double steal, the catcher ripping home. And there was something else from last night. Something else that I never thought that I would see. Something that I never thought that I would hear. Did you hear it? Not just the Dodgers racking up runs, but the MVP chance for Bellinger. MVP chance 3,000 miles from home. That's because Dodger fans were showing up in Boston and Philly and bringing the noise. Not just busting out the MVP chant for Bellinger, but the overrated chant for Bryce Harper. I'm an LA native. I spent a lot of time in this town. I've never seen the Dodger fan base travel like that. Bellinger said, quote, it was pretty special. We're in Philadelphia. We shouldn't have had that many fans here. That was pretty cool, end quote. Again, that's more than cool. That's impressive, really impressive, and unheard of by the team and by the fans. So for all you East Coast honks, this is my point. All of you claim that LA does not love baseball, that not only is the team showing up and wrecking shop in your time zone, but so are their fans. And no, I get beating up on a struggling Phillies team in July does not mean they're going to win the World Series this year. And they do still have some issues in the bullpen. It's not as reliable as they'd like it to be. Not as reliable as it's been, and not as reliable as it needs to be. But when you play nearly 6 hours in Boston on Sunday night, you get into Philadelphia around dawn Monday morning, and then you drop a 16 spot on the Phillies' head on Monday night, you're not just good, you're tough. The kind of toughness that wins games in October. The kind of toughness that may win you a world championship. So, East Coast, The excuses are over. You can't claim that you don't know if the Dodgers are good or not. You can't go East Coast bias on this one and say that they do all their work after you go to bed. Because right now they're in your house. They're posting up in your living room and they're pounding your teams. And they're having a blast. And to quote Ashwin Harris, you're bleeping welcome for this content.
You're welcome for this content, bitch.
You're bleeping welcome for this content, bitch.
You're welcome for this content, bitch.
So stop acting like you don't know them. Stop acting like you haven't seen them. Because now you have. And now you know. So put some respect on them. But not everybody is. Not everybody is. Especially on the East Coast. Including one of my favorite power brokers and journos ever. Boston Globe and jungle legend Dan Shaughnessy. I wonder if he's having any second thoughts after thumbing out the following tweet following Friday's opener against the Sox. Dan Shaughnessy tweeted, quote, Dodgers look like the same National League fraud we saw in October. Agree to disagree, my man. These Dodgers are different. Bring it up, Alvin. These Dodgers are different. But Dan, you're not, which is awesome. In fact, Dano, never change. And don't ever forget, you were the legend who refused to get a cell phone back in the day because you, quote, told me they're just a fad.
I do not have a cell phone. I think it might be a fad. I want to make sure that this is going to be something that stays around. So I'm just kind of, I'm taking a wait and see attitude on those things.
My man, Dan Shaughnessy. Hey, Dan, the internet, that's not going to last. That won't be here. Hey, Dan, automobiles, keep your horse, man. Those cars aren't going to be around long. They're a fad. Netflix, what a stupid idea that is. That'll never make it. Fire? Fire? People love being cold. Fire's a fad. Fire will never make it. Fire will never make it. It's a fad. We are joined by Julie Ertz. Julie, it's nice to have you on. How are you?
How are you?
I'm great, Julie. How about you? How are things?
Finally settled down. I got some sleep. So really good.
I bet.
But other than that, it's been great. I got to see some family and celebrate a little bit with them. So it was awesome.
Good for you. You kind of answered my first question. I was going to say it's been about a week since you beat the Netherlands. What's it been like? But I'm glad you finally got some sleep. You know, if you and I were to go back to last Sunday, you were dominating for large chunks of that first half, but the Dutch goalkeeper was making one enormous save after another, including one on your shot in the 27th minute. What was your reaction when she stopped that shot?
I'm not going to lie. I was really bummed.
All right.
I felt like the second I hit it, I was like, oh, that's a good shot. And when I looked up and she saved it. But yeah, she had a heck of a game for sure. But we knew it was going to be an absolute battle against them. They're a really, really good team. So every single time, we knew it was going to, we didn't want to panic and we knew that. So I think collectively on the field, everyone was like, it's fine. Like, you know, that's kind of expected in a final. So at halftime, we really kind of came in and, came together and relaxed and then went back out there.
Julie Ertz is joining us. So you come back out in the second half, and then you score in the 61st minute, and then in the 69th minute to take a 2-0 lead. So what's it like when the whistle blows and you know you've won that World Cup for a second time? Is the emotion one of joy, relief, maybe something else? What did that feel like?
Totally different than 2015, for sure. Like, in 2015, I was so emotional, and I was crying and all this. And this was just, like, pure joy. Like, I was so ecstatic. I took it all in this time around. I think I was so young last time. So the whistle blew and I just was like, I was grinning ear to ear. I couldn't wait to just go and celebrate with all my team. And I was ecstatic.
The celebration's awesome. I want to ask you about that in a minute. But you mentioned that you were so young. Back in 2015, you were actually the second youngest member of the team. You got an opportunity and you seized it. You played every minute of that tournament and you became a star in the process. And then you won the Player of the Year in 2017. So knowing what you knew this time coming in, how did you approach this year's World Cup? Did you approach it differently as a result?
Yeah, I absolutely had to. One, I was playing a different position, so let alone this tournament was going to be very different. Obviously, every year you have new players and a new team, so of course it's going to feel different, but for me it even felt way more different. You know, this is the first time I was going to be in a major tournament being a midfielder. So I was just really excited, but I think obviously from the Olympics and that tough loss, having that as well, I think it was also a very eye-opening experience that, hey, like, you really have to take it moment by moment in the game, game by game. So this time I just wanted to soak it all in and really enjoy the whole process. I think in 2015 I was just ecstatic to be on the team, and let alone I had no idea that I was actually going to be, you know, playing in the World Cup. So I think I was just so kind of just didn't really understand and really took it all in. So this time around I was like, I'm, you know, every second, don't check out, focus the whole time, really enjoy it. And that's what I did.
Julie Ertz is joining us. You know, you might have answered my next question, because I was going to say, since 2015, man, you've been through so much. You had the heartbreak of the Olympics. You've grown your game to the point where, as you point out, you can play multiple positions now. So how different are you as a player and a person than you were 4 years ago?
I'm very different. I've really enjoyed the journey that I've had. I've had a ton of adversity as well. But at the end of the day, I kind of learned that those times, those failures, and you know, anything that you get through as a challenge makes you a better person. And yeah, Zach and I collectively together have grown, you know, off the field, but on the field as well. And I'm truly grateful for really all the opportunities I've had. And I think the older I get, the more thankful I am for that. And yeah, it was an amazing tournament all around because of that.
We're talking to Julie Ertz. Now, you were the one who was actually carrying the World Cup trophy as you stepped off the plane after landing back in the States. How did that come to be? Was that by design or was that a fluke?
No, that's actually I didn't realize that was like a big thing at all. So I wanted to just like apologize for my team, because I was sitting by the door. So I was like handed the trophy. So I didn't really realize like the person that walks up the trophies, it's like a big thing. I thought we just came out, held the trophy, and then passed it along. So when I see my team again, I'll kind of be apologized. I probably shouldn't have been the one to hold it.
That's funny. Julie Ertz is joining us. Listen, I'll be honest. I absolutely loved watching how the team has celebrated that win and taken the party from France to New York and everywhere in between. What's it been like when you consider what everybody's gone through and the bonds that they're on that team? What's it been like to share that moment and run with this group of athletes?
Yeah, this team is really special. Probably one of the most special team that I've actually been a part of. I think collectively from, you know, we have a huge age in between. So I think just to all come together and bring, you know, the veterans and the young ones together, it just made such a fun team, because we had so much diversity of types of players and the style of play. And, you know, I think for us it's continuing to grow, you know, obviously women's soccer in general, and just coming together, and obviously so many things kind of going on outside and kind of creating this bubble of coming together and believing in each other. I mean, it truly was special from this January on, like, collectively through. I just felt something. I felt a spark, a different type of energy. And it was just, yeah, it was truly a joy to be a part of.
Julie Ertz is joining us for a few more moments. So, Julie, the 1999 team obviously was a group of legends who made their mark on the game. They inspired so many people. And after winning back-to-back titles, and now you're an author, what's it mean to you to know that all around this country, kids are looking up to you now as a role model?
It's a huge honor anytime I can, you know, put on the crest and represent our country. It truly is a blessing. And even the 99ers, just, you know, that's what really pushed, it was a huge monumental time, for women's soccer, and allowed me to dream to have that possibility of being there. And I think now, obviously getting to talk to some of the 99ers themselves and having a relationship is wild, because obviously before that's who I looked up to. But just learning their journey and what they had to do to kind of pave the way for us, it was huge. And I think to be able to kind of walk in their footsteps and keep that DNA of the fight, the grit that they started, is really important to me and to the team. And so to come back and have that support and some amazing, you know, things coming from that World Cup. I mean, I have to go back to my NWSL market in Chicago this weekend, and we've had amazing ticket sales, which is huge. Just to, like, really, you know, bring women's soccer for those young girls to be able to be a part of and dream to play, you know, professional sports in their own country is huge and super important. And I'm just so grateful for the fans to continue that support, obviously well after the World Cup win as well.
Julie Ertz joining us. Now, Julie, your book is entitled Chase Your Dreams, How Soccer Taught Me Strength, Perseverance, and Leadership. So how has the game taught you those attributes? Have you learned more from your success or from your failures?
That's a great question, but I'm going to have to say kind of both. I mean, it's been an amazing ride and journey, and I honestly never dreamed that I would write a book or anything like that, and kind of to coming off our second World Cup win and then also having a book for young kids, preteens, to be able to share those stories. I think, of course, I've had a lot of failures as well, so I think that's definitely important to share your scars and learn from that and, allow someone to reflect and relate. I think that's the biggest thing is you see athletes play on the weekends or in their game, and you might, not know their backstories of what they've been through or the adversity that they face. So to be able to kind of reflect and write everything in a book for kids to also understand and learn, and my journey through faith and kind of all those, underlying things that kind of make up me, was really cool for me to be able to reflect on that and hopefully obviously share with kids as well.
That is cool. Julie Ertz, my guest. Before you go, Julie, let's talk about your event this evening. You and Zach are hosting the Ertz Family Foundation Party event tonight, and more info is available at ertzfamilyfoundation.org. But let me ask you this. How much are you looking forward to the event and the work that your foundation is going to be able to do to raise the kind of money you're looking to raise?
Yeah, I'm so excited. To be honest, I'm not very good at golf, so it'll probably be more of a comedy show for whoever's golfing today.
Right.
But it's so cool to be able to give back. I mean, it's throughout our career and being able to have our own foundation, Zach and I, to be able to impact kids and give educational and sports opportunities to them is really important to us. And to kind of come back to Danville where Zach grew up, and we have so many friends and family here, and be able to give back as well around here in Richmond. So I'm so excited. I'm so excited to be back as well and be able to raise money and in the silent auction and to go out and have some fun on the golf range would be fun as well.
She is a member of the U.S. Women's National Team, a two-time World Cup champion and Olympian, the 2017 U.S. Soccer Female Player of the Year, a member of the Chicago Red Stars. She is an author and a big evening tonight in Danville. Julie, I'm so glad we could finally do it and come together. That was so fun. Really good to have you on the show. Thank you so much and good luck with everything.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Why don't we talk about birthday parties? It's that season, right? We've all been there. Some of you are still right in the middle of it. Some of you are still living it. You know, we have a child and your kid has a birthday party and then there's reciprocation. And this is what you do. Like if you're a parent and you have a kid between the ages of just came home from the hospital and say 12, chances are you have probably been to more birthday parties than you care to think about or care to remember. Because there comes a time in every adult's life when their weekends become nothing but a minivan tour of youth sports and birthday parties. Youth sports are not that bad of a thing. Like, your kids want to play sports, you want them in sports, you look forward to that. Birthday parties, though, are a different deal, especially if they're not drop-off, because that's mandatory. You're not there because you want to be there necessarily, but probably because you have to be there. So the two things that are universally true about kids' birthday parties are, once you go to one, you go to all of them. Because parents trade attendance like currency. There is reciprocation. You go to my kid's party, I will go to your kid's party. And then you multiply that by the amount of parents that you know, and all of a sudden, every Saturday that you have gets vaporized right off the calendar. And it's not for weeks or months, but it's for years. Which brings me to the second thing about kids' birthday parties. If we're all going to be stuck at them every single weekend, and I'm beyond that age now, but I've lived it. I've been there. I know. And I wish that somebody had pulled me aside at that time. In fact, I used to sell this at that time. If we're all stuck doing this every single weekend, then the host better have some cold ones in the basement fridge or specially marked ice chest at the park. Look, the kids, you don't have to worry about them. They're going to have fun no matter what. You put a cake in front of a kid, they're good. That said, you put a brewski in front of a guardian who has to deal with that kid who's all cracked out on cake, then the guardian is going to be good. It's only fair. It's only right. And trust me, it works. I learned this early on. That's why our birthday parties were the best birthday parties. Not because we had the best house. Not because I'm the best guy. Although I pretty much was. Not because we had the best entertainment. But because I always had a chest full of iced Heinekens. Of course. But not everybody did. In fact, thinking back, I'm the only one who did. That aside, most of these parties actually seem to follow the same formula. The kids hang out, they run around, they're fueled out of their minds on sugar, they crush some pizza, they smash up a piñata, they sing happy birthday, they inhale a slice of cake, they grab a gift bag on the way out, and then they knock the hell out in the car on the way home. The variable, though, at these parties, aside from whether or not there's a beer or two, is the activity that keeps the kids occupied. I also live that. We tried everything. Every imaginable thing. We had every imaginable party. We had the Wiggles. Well, they were fake. We had a Star Wars party. We had a feeding zoo. We had everything. So maybe it's a face painter. A bounce house. We've done that. Or on a rare occasion, and this is something we have not done, didn't do, the local professional team's mascot will show up and collect a check and be the surprise entertainment. All right, this is leading to something. This is exactly what happened over the weekend at a kid's birthday party when the New Jersey Devils mascot rolled through to hang with a group of jubilant children for the very reasonable fee of $250. Now, if you're thinking the Devils are like the Clippers and they've got a mascot that's got nothing to do with the name of the team, you'd be wrong. The Devils' mascot is, in fact, a devil. So the cartoon version of Satan was handpicked by some parent to hang out with kids who appear to be between the ages of maybe 3 and 5. I mean, nice going, Dad. You're looking to scare the hell out of the kids? Was Freddy Krueger already booked out? Did the clown from It have a scheduling conflict? Was Jason and his chainsaw too expensive? The only reason I know about that birthday party that happened on Sunday way across the country is because of a video that's making the rounds. And the only reason a video from that party is making the rounds is because the New Jersey Devil mascot damn near cross-checked himself right through a window. Now, let me set this scene. A dozen little kids are inside a party space, and they're playing the parachute game. That's where everybody grabs a piece of a giant parachute, throws it up in the air, and runs underneath it before it lands. We've all done that. The New Jersey Devil mascot is also playing that same game. But instead of running underneath the parachute, when it goes up in the air, the devil takes off running 15 feet towards a giant floor to ceiling window, and for no reason whatsoever. The only thing that stops him from running is the giant floor to ceiling window. Listen as the innocent sound of laughter abruptly gives way to the terrifying sound of glass shattering all over the mascot.
All right,
that's not some like sound library thing. That's how that really sounded. That's the mascot turning and running away from the game and slamming right into a ceiling to floor slate of glass. And listen to the mom in the background. Listen to the mom's reaction. She goes that the devil, nailed it.
Oh my God. Nailed it.
Nailed it. Nailed it. All that's missing from the video, and I've been trying to show you the video. I'm sorry I couldn't get that for you if you're watching on CBS Sports Network. It's probably not that hard to find. You can find it yourself. But if you're listening on the radio, you heard it, and it sounds magical. The only thing missing from that video clip is the devil breaking character and yelling, "He glossed me!
He glossed me!"
Of course, the mascot's not going to talk, but the mascot could have broken character and screamed out, "He glossed me!
He glossed me!"
Except he'd be yelling at himself because he glossed him. It would have to be, "I glossed me!
He glossed me!
I glossed me!
He glossed me!
I glossed me!
He glossed me!"
So the guy who posted the video says that he's the father of the birthday boy, and he says that everybody is fine, nobody got hurt. But if it's me, I'm going to put that mascot into concussion protocol just to be sure, because he slammed into that window hard. The question is, why? Why the hell did the devil take off and run away from the parachute game? And could he not see out of that giant devil head? Or did somebody do such a great job with the Windex that the glass just disappeared in the eyes of the devil? This is why they stick stickers on those glasses, so you don't get glossed. And as you know, this is the window breaking show of record. If somebody gets glossed, you're going to hear about it on this show. If somebody is going through a window and getting glossed, it's going to be talked about right here. Back in March, I brought you that story of that country club, Donnybrook, that ended up with one member headbutting another member through the window of the clubhouse after some cheating accusations had been put forth, and then somebody, of course, got glossed.
You're a thief, man. You're a cheat. I don't care. I'll call you to your
face.
You're a thief. Because
you're... Man, it's a gentleman's game. It's a gentleman's sport. You do not cheat at golf. Not unless you want to get headbutted through glass and get glossed. He headbutted me. But what makes today's story different is the devil mascot put himself through the glass. I guess you might not be allowed to self-gloss, but you can self-gloss.
He glossed me.
This guy self-glossed.
He glossed me.
No pissed off 22 handicap was doing it for him. He did it to himself. The only thing better than cracking a few cold ones at a kid's birthday party is watching a professional mascot crack some window gloss as he runs right through it. Let me tell you something, devil. Today, you're working for free. In fact, it's probably going to cost you something. I've got to assume that window is coming out of your paycheck. And don't try blaming the kids. Tape don't lie. And the tape right here shows you taking off in a dead sprint to window country. Nailed it. Dude, how calm is that mom? Nailed it. You ever have one of your kids throw a baseball through one of your windows? We all have, right? Last time that happened in my house, I did not look at the window and go, way to go, Jake. Nailed it.
That's
a floor or ceiling-to-floor window that this guy smashed. But all is well that ends well. And it should be no surprise that since that was a hockey mascot, he was not hurt at all.
It's in the mouth, teeth area. He'll be fine. He's a hockey player.
I don't know. Maybe next year, Pops. Maybe next year, you just book Buzz Lightyear.
He glossed me.
We are joined by Franklin Session. Frank, good to have you back. How are you?
I appreciate you guys having me on, man. It's been a while, but thanks. I'm good. How you doing?
Good, man. In fact, it was last summer you came in studio, and we talked about your amazing journey at that time. I know you're a busy guy these days. Bring me up to date. How is life treating you? What are things like?
Life is great so far, man. I just got back from Qatar immediately after that. Drew League started, and then shortly after that, the Big Three started. So I've kind of been go since last year.
We're talking to Franklin Session. I was going to ask you about Qatar. So you played in Qatar last season. You were named Guard of the Year in First Team All-League. What was the experience like both on and off the floor in Qatar?
It was lovely, man. It was beautiful over there. It was like a mini Dubai. They treated me real nice. I got to go out there and play hard and, showcase my talent.
Then earlier in the year, as you mentioned, you were entered into the Big Three draft pool. What was your reaction when Thomas Scott in the league reached out to you? Did you think that was real, or did you think that somebody was playing a joke?
I thought it was a joke. I thought it was more so of them just hinting at, me playing. I didn't think it was actually going to come full circle. So it was kind of funny when people started messaging more and I started getting emails and they sent over a contract. And I was like, wow, this is real.
And then when Steven Jackson reaches out and he asks you if you want to play, you said you screenshotted that and you sent it to your wife immediately. What was that moment like? And did you know at that point, man, this is real. This is going to happen.
That moment was crazy. I screenshot it, sent it to my wife, sent it to a couple other people. And I was like, yo, I think this is really about to happen. So it was kind of unbelievable, especially being, you know, alongside some of the Hall of Fame coaches and NBA All-Star players and champions. I was just like, man, I'm just happy to be a part of it all.
Frank Concession, my guest. You know, Frank, you played a lot of basketball, but what was the opportunity with the Big Three that appealed to you so much? What did you like about that chance?
I just liked that I got to play with, you know, some of the best in the world, some of the best that, you know, people try their life to reach that level of NBA, basically. And a lot of people don't get there. So being the guy that didn't get there, and I'm still, you know, amongst some of the people who did play in the NBA, I mean, it's just great to get that acknowledgement.
All right, so you're playing for Killer Threes as the co-captain alongside Jackson. What's it like to play or be playing with Stack?
Oh, man, I love Stack Jack, man. He's probably as real as they come. He's embraced me with open arms, and he's been like a big brother to me, man. He's everything he said has been 100% truthful, you know. And he plays the game with a level of passion that I thought, you know, only a few people had, one included myself. So it's just nice to go out there and compete with somebody like him.
You know, what's really interesting to me too is not only does he had that passion when he played, but he still has that passion. Like if you see him and you watch him on social, like he still has that passion. And then on top of that, you've got Charles Oakley. Oak is your coach. What's the experience like playing for Oak?
Playing for Oak, man, is it's different. It's full throttle. He has the same passion and love for the game Stack Jack has. So we're all like literally like the same people. So, you know, when they say something in a certain tone, I get where it's coming from, and it's different, but I can appreciate it.
Got Frank Oak. Like, we're running some video of him right now on CBS Sports Network. My man looks amazing. Amazing, right? He's taking care of himself. This guy, Oak, must have – what's his discipline like even right now in this life and at that age?
He probably has one of the best. I think him, Corey Maggette, Steven Jackson, like all them guys really just take care of their bodies and kind of stay in the gym and you know, just they stick to their routine. Even if they're not, you know, in the NBA anymore and not playing at a high level, they still stick to, you know, their workout routines, their typical regimen, you know, to stay in shape.
That's always interesting. Like some guys, they can't wait. When you spend your entire life and you're that dedicated and that focused and that disciplined, you can't wait to say, man, I'm done. But some guys never, ever let it go. To your point, they stay with the routine. And then you had a great post on Instagram about a week back. It's a photo of you with Clyde Drexler, Dominique Wilkins, and Charles Oakley. Remember, you gave up your 9-to-5 job 2 years back, and you haven't looked back. What's it like now when you're with legends like Drexler, Wilkins, and Oak? Does it feel like it's all worth it?
Oh, man, 100%. Man, I tell myself that every day now. I couldn't believe that. It's funny, before that photo, after my second game, we pulled out like a tough win. Clyde Drexler talked in the airport for about 20 minutes, man, and it was probably one of the craziest conversations I've had. Just hearing, you know, some of the stuff he said and him thinking I was an NBA caliber player, man, was just crazy to hear. It was surreal. That photo, it was funny. When we took it in the hallway, Clyde Drexler introduced me to Dominique Wilkins, and then he was kind of like, this is Frank. This is Frank Nitti. You know, this is. Like, he was excited, and it was just so crazy to hear Clyde Drexler talk about me that way. You know, like, you introduce your, like, talented friend to somebody else. It was kind of like that. So it was probably one of the dopest things, you know, that I've ever had happen in my life.
That is awesome. Franklin Session joining us. I love that that's your reaction to that, because that's got to be awesome. And then earlier this month, you were playing the three-headed monsters in Atlanta. Mario Chalmers was trying to guard you. I say trying because time and time again, you put him on skates. What was your mindset going into that matchup?
My mindset is the same for every matchup. Go out there, play hard, and I'm going at whoever, you know, is in front of me. I don't care who it is. I don't care, you know, what I got to do to help the team win. I'm there to do a job.
I get that. I understand that. I believe that. But I will say this. When you and I spoke, we talked about that legendary beating you put on Denzel Valentine last summer. And in part, it was motivated by the disrespect he showed to you and the Drew League. So when you play Big Three ball, do guys give you the proper respect? Has anything like that happened?
I feel like in any league that you go in, that you're new in, you have to earn your respect. And I'm used to that. I'm always an underdog. Being I've never played in the NBA, I'm pretty sure guys are going to go out there and not take me serious. I mean, I don't have a resume that like that they have. So I can't say that's what they say or that's how they feel, but I just know that's how I feel. So I got to go out there every night, every game, and go at them like, you know, I'm earning my respect all over again.
Franklin Session joining us. Listen, I get the opportunity, or I get the sense that you love this opportunity you have with the Big Three, but let me talk about the jersey for 1 minute. It says Session on the back. Are you all right with that, or is it time for the league to change that jersey to Nitty and let the people have what they want?
Man, I'm protesting right now. I want a Frank Nitty jersey, but they do one like nickname jersey and then one regular jersey. So, Steven Jackson told me that actually, I didn't realize it, but, I'm trying to get that. I'm definitely trying to get that set in stone. I just want my jersey to go online. I got a lot of people that say, you know, they want to support and, you know, I've never had that. I've never been in NBA. I've never had people wanting to, you know, buy my jersey and wear my name on the back of their back. So, I mean, something like that is you know, unreal as well. So I hope the Big Three hears this and they release my jersey online. So I can see how many fans really support me, man. But it's been a crazy ride so far.
Franklin Session, it's been one of the best rides. Now, the thing is, you're not just playing Big Three. You're still playing Drew League ball as well. Why was it important for you to make sure that you kept on playing in the Drew League?
Because the Drew League is home, man. The Drew League is who made me who I am today. And it's kind of like an extra workout day. So if I can work out the day before a game, you know, why not do it? And there's a lot of people I talk to who are really passionate about the game and the Drew League. And myself, I'm passionate about it. So people come out there to see us play, and I don't want to let anybody down. And I want to just keep playing until, you know, the wheels fall off.
Yeah, Frank, the Drew League has got some extremely high-level competition, and it's a place where guys like to test themselves and their games. The Big Three is a spot where you're going up against NBA All-Stars all the time. Aside from the format, what is the biggest difference between those two leagues?
The biggest difference, man, I will say you not every single game you're going up against, you know, an ex-NBA, you know, Hall of Famer or a Hall of Fame coach or an NBA champion. Some games in the Drew League, you won't have that. Every game in the Big Three, you either have a Hall of Fame coach or you got an all-star, you know, player coming at you. So I would say that is a different element to it. Guys are exploiting weaknesses. Guys are you know, scouting. It's so much different in the Big Three because, I mean, you only get, you know, 10 weeks to basically win it all. So it's pretty intense. The Drew League's a little longer, and I don't think teams scout or anything as much. So The Big Three is just next level, to be honest, man. It's you know, the best in the world compete in it.
Hey, let me ask you this. For those who did not hear our conversation last summer, we talked about the road that you've traveled. It has not been an easy one, to be sure. There have been some setbacks. There's some moments where it may have even seemed like it might be over. And now you're a legend, and guys like Kobe, James Harden, Jamal Crawford, they're packing gyms to see you in the Drew League, and you're playing in the Big Three League. I mean, how does that all feel?
You can't really put stuff like that into words, man. I have had like multiple NBA guys like message me asking me when I'm playing, or you know, they want to come out and support or come see a Big Three game. Like stuff like that is unreal. Like I was just working a 9-to-5 two and a half years ago, man, 2 years ago. So it's like you guys want to see me, man. I've been watching you guys on TV for forever, so it's crazy to see. But they understand the passion. And, you know, how much intensity I bring to the game. And that's just fun to watch. You know, today's NBA, you don't get to you see people go at it as much anymore with the flagrant calls and referees, you know, trying to clean up the game. With the Big Three, man, they just let you go all out and play. And same as the Drew League, man. You can go out there, talk smack, and get after it.
So finally, you're the kind of guy that young kids come up to you. They ask you for advice when it comes to basketball. And one of the things you tell them is try to stay on the floor. What do you mean by that, and how valuable is that experience of just continuing to be on the floor and learning all the little things about the game?
I will say, man, you have a lot of information. You hear just about everything, Jim. But that's funny.
Appreciate
you said
man.
That.
Yeah.
That's funny you said that. I do get a lot of, like, people that hit me up saying I'm a big influence. To be honest, man, I wasn't good all my life, and I tried to stay on the floor and help win games, and I was just a role player. And to be honest, I was subbed in for defense and I was subbed out for offense. So kind of just being on the floor helped me become, you know, who I am today. Like just winning and understanding that, you know, you don't have to be the best player on the court at that time. There's still intangibles you can do that'll keep you on the floor. Like, you know, if you're a great defender, great rebounder, and you can get the guys who can put it in the basket the easiest, the ball, I mean, that's valuable. Like, NBA needs players like that, that they have their main scores. It's hard to get a guy to come in and buy in and be a great role player. Iguodala, for example, I mean, he's probably going to go down as one of the best role players to ever do it, and he was a star at one point in his life as well. So I just try to tell guys all the time, just do whatever it takes. The intangibles like rebounding, defending, making open shots, or, you know, getting somebody else an open shot. Little stuff like that keeps you on the floor and makes it where it's hard to sub you out.
Good night now!